Succession number 3790, Reel 9.
Now I have to go back. The first weekend we were at our camp, quite a few of us hitchhiked down to Bayeux, because after all, Bayeux was the home of the Bayeux tapestries. And going into Bayeux, we passed German prisoner of war camps, and they smelled to high heaven, which was a proof to us that our uniforms, which had been impregnated with two chemicals to a very great advance towards the German ones. We had, apparently the British uniform was impregnated with something similar to DDT, and consequently none of us got lousy. And there was some other chemical in our uniforms. And apparently the stuff was always put back after they were cleaned, when the germs stank like hell. And when we got to Bayeux, I went to the museum with some of my mates, and we saw some of the Bayeux tapestries which had been hidden and which were put up again. And I sent a letter to my mother, very incautiously, in which I mentioned that I went to see some beautiful tapestries. Well, the army was, of course, right by telling us not to say in our mail where we were. But anyway, this letter got through. So my mother knew I was in Normandy. And coming back to the camp, we had, the beginning of October, quite a lot of rain, and we were working in denims, naturally. We had two pairs of boots. The boots were wet, our socks were wet, and the dampness came into our tents, although we were luckily on elevated platforms on the beds we had built. But the army issued us in the evening with a tot of rum, and there wasn't a single person in our company of 280 who caught a cold. And this is another one. This is up on the British Navy. And it just showed that our working out of doors and being given the right balance as far as vitamins in our food, although it was meat and vegetable, or in my case, mushrooms and cheese and eggs, kept us very fit. Anyway, from Normandy, we left by lorry for Belgium. And our first port of call was Lille, where we put in an army barracks overnight, and where we got food from enormous cauldrons of army, what do you call these things, canteens. And I can assure you, the food was not as good as in our camp, because our cooks were better than the British Army cooks. And from Lille, we went on by lorry to a place called Ninove, N-I-N-O-V-E, which is on the road from Brussels to Ghent, the Gand, and we were stationed, or billeted rather, in the match factory. And we had warm beds with palliasses, and there our job was filling jerry cans from petrol lorries. And there we encountered the black market. Some of our sergeants, I understand, they somehow managed to get local contacts, and quite a number of the loaded jerry cans disappeared into the black market. But that was not my pigeon. Anyway, when I was at Ninove, the first weekend, I got a pass down to Brussels on Saturday, and I went into the canteen in the Jardin Botanique, which is opposite the Botanical Gardens, and there I saw a poster, any members of British members of the Allied Forces, members of the International Friendship League, please contact Lisette Kuckelberg at an office in the Place Brucaire. I was a member of the International Friendship League in London, and I left a letter at her office. And I returned the billets one evening, and I found a letter from Lisette, who had been working for the... Sorry, could you just switch off a sec? Lisette had been a school teacher, and he'd been working for the Spark government in exile. That means she was a Belgian spy working against the Germans in Belgium, which I didn't know. Anyway, as soon as I saw this notice, I sent a message to London. They should send me a letter for Lisette to exonerate me, that I, as a British soldier, a British soldier with a German accent, was there to make contact. Anyway, I went to see her at Skærbæk, rang the bell. It was pouring outside. I had my ground sheet over my body. And when I opened my mouth, she went absolutely white. And so I gave her my letter of introduction. And we became very good friends. I met Lisette later on in England, and I met her in Belgium again, and I met her in Switzerland. She was sent by the Belgian government to recuperate from TBC, and she was given a high order of the Belgian government. Anyway, from Ninov, we were sent to a place called Hall, H-A-L, which is west of Brussels. And there we were just in billets, we were just messing around, and I became the medical orderly to the Royal Signals. And that means I had to assist the Royal Signals medical officer for the Royal Signals as well as our men. And at that time, the British had taken over the German military hospital, which was situated in the former Belgian military hospital, and my medical officer, who was an Irishman, who just qualified, said to me, go down with a lorry as a driver and requisition medical equipment, and you take two sets, one for the medical room and one for me, because when I get out of the army, I want to establish myself. I've got nothing. And the money I get out of the army won't pay me the instruments. So I said, okay, fine, just give me the pass to go. So we went down in a 1500 weight to the military hospital, and I drew two otoscopes and two stethoscopes and two things which you put into the anus to examine the anus. And all the implements I could get, I got lots of what do you call the things you put in your mouth? Thermometers, and then I got bandages, and I got MNB tablets from the Germans, and MNB powder, It was very impressive that the German M&B powder was much better than ours, because we had M&B crystals, and they were sometimes caused more trouble if putting on a wound than they cured. The German M&B powder was in a box shaped like a heart, and you pricked a hole in the front and you just strewed it out. Anyway, I got hold of as much as I could. I got bandages, I got iodine, I got...
How did they come to have German powder?
Well, it was German military hospital. You see, the German military hospital was situated in the Belgian military hospital, so it was full of German supplies. And I got tubes with against frostbite, and I got one tube of what do you call this stuff? Barbiturate. Well, this tube of barbiturate I drew for myself in case I was caught by the Germans, and I kept it with my first field dressing in my pocket. And
what did you intend to do with it?
Well, in case I was caught by the Germans, well, I swallowed a lot, which I almost did in the Ardennes. Anyway, I collected so much supplies, and also I went to the station where they issued French letters, rubber preservatives, because very stupidly, the British Army had not issued us with rubber sheaths, which they should have done through the NAFI. And anyway, I went back and I gave the supplies intended for the medical room, and then I went back to the company and I gave them the French letters as well. And then I called the medical orderlies of my company together and gave each more supplies, medical supplies, than the British Army issued us with. We had just one tin box, a black tin box, which looked like an old-fashioned respirator case. And anyway, everybody got this M&B powder, which was marvelous. Everybody got the sulfanilamide tablets. I still got a box of it. And everybody got more stuff from the German Army than they ever had from the British Army. And the tubes against frostbite, they came in very, very useful when we were in the Ardennes later on. Anyway, I asked the doctor if I should get a bed, an examination bed, for the medical room. He said, no, don't get that, because you might want to make use of it if you take a girlfriend in. Well, one doesn't need a bed for that. The floor does just as well, I suppose. But anyway, as I was medical orderly to him, I was stationed with the Royal Signals, and who were a very, very nice bunch, because the Royal Signals, being trained in electric work, they do require a higher intellectual standard than the Royal Engineers. I saw my people there. I slept with them, but I ate with my unit. And when I was out at Hull, I went to the Brussels, the pictures, and once on my trip back to Hull, I got talking to a Belgian girl, and we spoke French. And she stayed with an aunt in Hull, and we got friendly, and eventually she turned out to be my first girlfriend. I was a late starter, and she seduced me. And that was 44, that means I was 28. I had never had any relations with a girl before. Anyway, after it been to the pictures in Brussels with her, we couldn't go to her aunt's house, and we went into the park, the local park, and I had my first experience of cohabitation with her sitting across me in the park. And the second time was in the medical room on the floor. So we didn't need a table. An examination table. I mean, the medical officer had given me the tip. It was my introduction to sex at the age of 28. Anyway, in Hull, there was a patisserie, and of course they could sell cakes, but they couldn't sell coffee. They had only imitation coffee, and I had always some coffee with me, which I carried in a small tin. And I went in there, and I gave them this tin, and they made me a coffee filter, for which they didn't charge. They gave me milk or sugar, and they made them a second infusion, which they got for Bakshi, you see. And that was my remembrance of Hull. And from Hull, we were sent to the forest. We were sent to went to the Ardennes, and we got there. Must have been beginning of November, and part of the section, our section went to Saint-Hubert, which I visited on a holiday in 1935 or 36 with my mother. And headquarters section went to La Roche-en-Ardennes. Anyway, there we were in forestry again. And it was a sawmill attached to the Canadians, and I was on the saw and on the axe. And when we had the sawmill built, we also built a hut outside, which was a guard's hut. And the guards, we had some Canadians staying in the guard hut overnight, and some of our chaps, and they had a good guard duty at night. And one night, one of our chaps, who hardly spoke any English, was on duty. He was a Viennese, and he heard somebody moving, and he said, "Hold, who goes there?" Put his bayonet forward, and caught somebody who was a German, but in a sort of mixture of British and American uniform, marched him into the guard hut, and then we had a brothel in Saint-Hubert, which was used by the Canadians, some of whom were of Norman origin, French origin. And they spoke a peculiar sort of a French, which the locals didn't understand, because it was Norman French. But they understood our French, because it was similar to that of the Germans who had been stationed in Saint-Hubert before. And what our French Canadians didn't know, that the same brothel was also used by the German spies who were operating in the area. Anyway, we used a certain pub in the square opposite the church in Saint-Hubert for our drinks and for writing our letters. And one day, the Canadians, standing by the bar, noticed there was a fellow, there were two chaps standing next to them, and they were wearing army boots, either Canadian or American, which were laced the German way. The English way is, what do you call this, straight, parallel.
Parallel.
The English boot, the English way of lacing a boot is in parallel strands, while the German one is crosswise. And that was very odd to them. Now, the man was wearing a uniform, or the two men were wearing a uniform, which was a mixture of British, American, and Canadian. And that was one thing that was made them suspicious, but the main suspicion was the boots. And so they grabbed them. And they went for interrogation, and they proved to be Germans. So that was one thing. Anyway, the day after that, we came back on our working site, and we had passing the guard's hut, women with baskets with laundry, and they chatted up the soldiers and went on their way. And of course, we didn't know. We thought it was a genuine thing. But after we caught these chaps, these fellows were caught in the pub, we came back to the working site, and they found where we had been chopping down trees, there was a cover open, there was a case made below, and there they found the baskets with remains of bread and the laundry. And that was the answer. Apparently, the Germans had been hiding in these basements during the day when we were working on top. They had been supplied by these Wallon women with bread and foodstuff, and they brought the laundry, apparently. And some of them were caught by our people, but it was only found out later that they'd been using the brothel the same time as our Canadians, and that's where they got the information from. Anyway, when the battle with the Rundstedt push started at Bastogne and down in Luxembourg, the Germans knew that at Champlain, where we had a section, we had a platoon doing forestry work, we had not carted away or destroyed the German ammunition dump. There was a very large ammunition dump near our sawmill. And the Germans who came with their tanks from Bastogne and from Luxembourg knew that they did not have to take any extra lorries for supplies because they could replenish at Champlain. Anyway, just a few days before Christmas, we were told they called out at night, pack up straight away, get on the lorries, and the trailer set off with what was movable off the sawmill, and we drove in a long convoy during snowy conditions towards Charleroi with the intention of going back to Brussels, I suppose. But when we got to Charleroi, instruction was issued, about turn, and you're going back to Saint-Hubert. The idea was this, that aerial reconnaissance by the Germans would show that reinforcements are coming back to the Ardennes, and so that they might withdraw. But aerial conditions were such that it was a very gray sky, and no aerial reconnaissance would have been possible unless there would have been very low-flying aircraft. But anyway, we got back to, on the 23rd, we got back to Saint-Hubert, and we had been collecting our laundry from the local laundry, and we got that with us. And we went back in our billets, and at night we called out again, 4 o'clock in the morning, onto the lorries, back. And so we retreated then, and under darkness, went back via Charleroi, and went to a place called Lembeck, 20 kilometers outside Brussels. Could you stop? I have to go to Lembeck. Now, Lembeck is, on like Brussels, on the border of the French and Flemish-speaking area. And a small village, or small township, with a square, with a church in the center. And we arrived on the 24th of December, 44. And the headquarter company was already there, and the people from Champlain were there, and we were the last to arrive. And we were billeted in the dance hall above a pub, like we were in all the other places. This was very useful. You have got these billiard or dance halls above the pubs, and also parties of dining rooms in the large pubs, which were used as billets all over the country, which was a normal thing in Belgium. Anyway, the next day, on Christmas Day, we all marched in groups to the dining room, which was in the largest restaurants. And coming back from the restaurant, we went along the square where the church was, and I passed the butcher on the right-hand side, And there was a little man, butcher, and there was a Jewish-looking man standing next to him. And he hailed the man in front of me, asked him in German, "Mr. Yud, are you a Jew?" And he, a Viennese by the name of Stanwell, shrugged his shoulders and didn't want to know. Well, he was at what we call Geschmat. He was a baptized one. Anyway, now I came along with my friend George Burns, and he asked the same question. So I said, "Je ne comprends pas, qu'est-ce que monsieur veut?" I asked, said in French, "I'm sorry, I don't understand what he said. What does he want?" So he told, so the butcher spoke to me in French, and the Jewish-looking fellow spoke to the butcher in Flemish, and I answered in French. Well, I understood the Flemish because I'd been in Holland when I was 9 years old for 6 months, and I heard some Dutch, and it didn't make much difference for me to read a Dutch, a Flemish paper or a French paper. So it suddenly came back, and so I interrogated the Jewish-looking fella, and he said, yes, he was living on a small farm outside Lembeck with his wife, daughter, and brother-in-law, and that he had been working for the Marquis, for the Armée Blanche, when the British dropped supplies with his cart. And I said, now, where do you come from originally? He comes from Aachen, and he was a horse dealer. So I said, look, my French was at that time better than now. I said, look, if you're a horse dealer, Aachen is a town which produces cloth, which has got cloth mills, but doesn't have any need for a horse dealer. He said, well, actually, I come from near there. So I said, from where? From a little town called Lennich. And so I got a bit itchy, and I realized that he was genuine. And I said, Lennich, did you know my uncle, Otto Löwenthal? He said, yes, he was my partner. And so he went through the list. He said, you're not the son of Johanna because the son is in South America. Dina hasn't got a son. Another one hasn't got a son. It must be the son of Guste. So I said, that's right. So I said, well, make me a map where you are situated and what do you need? So he said, I need matches. We need matches. We need flints for our lighters. We need some cotton. Anything else? I said, no. So I said, well, I come to see you. So I drew the next day from the Nephi whatever I could, and I went to see him. And then it turned out that he had a very attractive daughter, Helga. We took to each other, but I couldn't, my German was too...